Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here, we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. They all come from walks of life resembling the lives like you, our listeners. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are many times brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With this determination and courage and insistence, they are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to how these inspirational stories may be closely related to your own. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest, an only son of parents of first-generation Russian immigrants. Encircled by gifted parents of artistry, his mother, a piano prodigy of profound proportions and student of famed Dr. Frank Domrich, and master of the Metropolitan Opera House of New York. His father, reaching high attainment in music and critic of dance, however, with such visionary talent, flair, and capacity, they were showered by fear and uncertainty, thus setting forth a complex set of mixed messages inherited by our guests. Key ingredients universal to us all, parental love, love's practice were more known than felt. Despite his father's aloofness and mother's anguish and distress, love was supplied by another source. A profound experience at the age of five, set in performing on Broadway, touring and speaking nationally, and he finally clicked into motion what he had learned through his childhood epiphany. Please listen to this inspiring story. Bennett Gale, welcome to today's program.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Henry. I'm very happy to be here.
Bennett, there is you cast such a broad scope of activities and have such a rich, rich family history. I'm wondering if you could communicate to our listeners essentially just what your current activities are.
Well, there are a lot.
Right.
It's pretty multifaceted. I am involved in one way or another with trying to stimulate awareness. And I do that by teaching. I teach theater, acting. I teach it to schools in Siskiyou County, and as well as teaching adults. And I found that on this particular area, that paradoxically, we can learn more about ourselves by becoming somebody else.
That's an interesting comment.
It is. When it dawned on me that was the truth, I found it fascinating.
Mm-hmm. But could you explain that a little bit more to us?
Sure. Well, I think I call Earth Paradox University.
Okay.
And my own aspiration is to become human emeritus. However, when you have to step out of your skin, there's an old saying that you need to step out of your skin sometimes to save it. But as somebody who's studying acting, when you take on the dynamics of someone else, then you naturally start comparing yourself to whatever the characteristics are of that other person.
Sure.
And everything from, depending on how deep down the rabbit hole you want to jump, everything from their physicality, why do they say the things that they do? Why do they use those words? What do they do that's either similar or different than what you do? Mm-hmm. And that gives you a different kind of perspective on yourself. So it's a pretty fascinating journey. So I teach that.
And you teach this at the high school level? Or?
I teach it currently at the high school level, and I teach adults as well. However, since being up in Siskiyou County, I have taught from ages 5 to 85. Mm-hmm. And I also created a theater company up there called New Frontier Theater Company, and we perform at various venues in the county and sometimes in Reading. Mm-hmm. And we've done a lot of productions. In our 5 years, we've done maybe 20 productions.
That's a full schedule.
That's a full schedule, and that's only getting started.
You know, when I first hooked up with you, mm-hmm. I attended the Dickens Christmas play, and was absolutely speechless, to be really honest with you. I was so intrigued and moved to see how an individual, Charles Dickens or Bennett Gale, perform for well over an hour and a half, playing the role of Charles Dickens, and 30 other individual parts throughout the whole presentation. Mm-hmm. And I was just astounded of your mental capability to remember every introduction and every voice. That was just astounding.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit more about that Charles Dickens story?
Sure. I had never been that involved with Charles Dickens and his literature and his work. And early on in the theater company's history, I decided we needed a show, and I thought, for the holiday season, and I thought, well, I think I can do this. And I started doing research on Charles Dickens, and I began to realize that we have a great deal of similarity.
Well, you and Charles.
Yes, Charles and I. And as I kept on studying and working on it, I began to feel that, well, maybe I'm Charles Dickens. And
well, you sure fooled us.
Well, hopefully not. Or hopefully did. I see, I get it. So I worked on the piece, and as I studied more and more, I realized that that's what Charles Dickens used to do. He really aspired to be an actor. Uh-huh. And it's just that his writing took off, and it took off quite early in his life. He was widely successful when he was still in his 20s, which was not common. Mm-hmm. In fact, he was the first literary superstar.
Really?
Of the English-speaking world. Mm-hmm. And he's also credited, by the way, a little side note, for the phrase, Merry Christmas.
Really?
Yep. Anyway, I feel like I'm just carrying on the tradition of Mr. Dickens. I feel like I am Charles Dickens. So now when I do a performance, I feel rather complete freedom. Mm-hmm. Because I wrote it.
Well, you're so very much at ease, and I think that there isn't a person that would see this presentation would just be absolutely swept off their feet.
Oh,
just
thank
no
you.
Question about it. Of the mental capability of reciting different characters with the precise wording, mm-hmm. for well over an hour and a half is just absolutely astounding. So I'm
thank
still
you.
Shook up by it.
Well, I'm overjoyed that kind of communication exists. Mm-hmm. That's the purpose for me in performing. It's a service, it's a gift, and I consider the audience and myself one organism. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you got a good start.
Thanks. Yeah. So, I'm glad it serves.
You also served in Broadway.
Yes, I had an extraordinary experience way back then. Another one of these lives, I had been going to school in upstate New York, mm-hmm. in Ithaca, and living up there. And I decided to move down to the city. I grew up outside of the city, but I moved down from upstate New York and was blessed to immediately audition for this show called Beatlemania as Ringo.
Ringo Starr.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether I got cast for my drumming or my nose.
Maybe both.
Maybe both. All I know, it was hay fever season, and I had a beard, in which accentuated the nose, and the hay fever accentuated the accent, because everybody from Liverpool, when they speak, they sound like they've got a cold,
mm-hmm.
and no matter what they say, every sentence sounds like a question. So... that was an incredible experience. It was a very popular show.
Well, you were an excellent drummer as you started playing the drums at a very, very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And you also took this Beatlemania show on the road, isn't that correct?
That's true.
Uh-huh.
It was already on the road while we were still on Broadway, and I was fortunate enough to be part of the permanent Broadway cast. So I was there for a little over 2 years, but I spent another almost 2 years on the road. I didn't get to go to England. I did get to go to Canada and Japan,
mm-hmm.
and all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty exciting. It was a very popular show. I remember we went up to Toronto and performed for a 4,400 seat theater. And this was the third time the show had gone in there.
Really?
And,
wonderful.
And we were there for a month playing. Normally you do 8 shows a week. Mm-hmm. And we were doing 12 to 16 shows a week, sold out.
My goodness sakes.
So it was quite popular.
Wow. You obviously have a pretty crystal clear vision for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the whole community is very, very what I want to say is that I think that I view you as really a gift to the area, because you bring some marvelous teachings, mm-hmm. and experiences to pretty rural part of Northern California. And so I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful undertaking. And I wonder if you could share with our listeners more of your vision.
Love to.
Okay.
It's pretty comprehensive. And
well, our listeners are pretty smart.
Pardon?
Actually, our listeners are pretty smart.
Well, I'm glad. And then they can help me. I've had a vision since being a small child, and it's redefined itself, of course, as I've become more sophisticated, had more experiences. The bottom line is that I've seen a world where we are much more advanced, where we are much more synchronous with our activities with each other, and that we are operating from a basis of being a service-centric society rather than an ego-centric society, mm-hmm. which means that we're in it for each other in a much more profound way. So I've created something called Sacred Inner Theater, which teaches this. And consequently, that's really the direction of the rest of my life. And I'm happy to go into a lot of detail about that if you'd like.
I think we will go more into the detail, and we're also going to transition back to your childhood years. We need to take a short break right now. And if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5, listener-supported radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today, of course, is Bennett Gale. And we'll be right back shortly. Don't move. Again, we're back. This is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio in Bella Vista, California. And I'm speaking here with Bennett Yale, what do I call you, a theatrical person or somebody that just...
I've been called
super,
worse.
Super smart, I don't know. But Bennett, you started talking about your entire vision, which I think, as I mentioned, the community is just wonderful implications that you bring to our community. So if you could share more of your vision that you have.
My vision has always been fueled by the desire for greater awareness. And I've had that since I've been a little child. And of course, that means different things as I get older. And what I'm realizing is that all of us have an extraordinary potential that for the most part is not being realized. And I see that we are living... This is a generalization, of course. We are living in a paradigm that focuses on limitation and suffering. Well,
what do you mean by that limitation?
Well, our beliefs as a mass group and consciousness, they're all about finite potentials. Well, you can get this far in life, or once you get to this age, you can only do such and such, and then there's a decline. Or so many people are led to believe that they're either not smart enough or talented enough to realize whatever their inner goals might be, particularly when they're children. Mm-hmm. I've found that usually children have these wonderful fantasies, and some of them perhaps are fantastical in that they're not part of this world, but so many of them are the themes that they, in my opinion, that they came in here to realize, and yet they get squashed. The mm-hmm. dreams get squashed by, quote, reality. The educational systems, in so many examples, in my opinion, almost serve the opposite of educating. They seem to feed certain kinds of information rather than provoking exploration, development, greater awareness, going into areas that the individuals may have envisioned but are not getting confirmation by their authority figures.
Share with us some of the experiences that you're enjoying in your teachings in schools?
Yeah. In the schools and in my separate Sacred Inner Theater program, I am seeing people wake up to a much greater sense of authenticity, mm-hmm. a much greater sense of who they are from a spiritual awareness perspective. So what that means is that their confidence in who they are, their confidence in their relationship to the environment, to source, to God, to spirit, whatever verbiage, mm-hmm. Works for them, they're beginning to establish a much greater alignment and connection. And therefore, they're stepping out of these smaller shells of who they think they are mm-hmm. or who they've been. Mm-hmm. And this is not just for the young people. Again, I've got people that I'm working with who are well into their 70s and mm-hmm. a couple that are in their 80s. You're never chronologically too old to expand and explore.
I certainly believe that.
Sure. And that's the beauty of awareness. Mm-hmm. Awareness is not bound by our concept of time. Mm-hmm. So I believe that underneath everything that we're experiencing here, regardless of some of the heinous stuff that's going on, right? Yeah, that there's joy. Mm-hmm. And I cannot be convinced that we aren't able to live in joy, regardless of our situations. And that's, I guess there's a bottom line, is what I'm interested in growing in myself is freedom, is sovereignty, mm-hmm. from the most expansive perspective.
Mm-hmm. Bennett, what is joy to you?
Joy for me, that's a lovely question. Joy for me is the inner knowing that I'm spirit and that I and the divine are one.
Ooh, that's quite a statement. You get right over the plate.
It's only got an hour.
Interesting for you. You know, Helen Keller said, the only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision.
Amen.
Isn't that's exactly what you're prototyping?
Absolutely.
Remarkable. Well, you certainly are giving us and our listeners a very, very interesting perspective on what your passion and what your works are, unquestionably. But not all of this really started on a lullaby theme in your younger years.
Not hardly.
Because your development years were pretty fragile.
Yes, sir.
As I understand that. So could you take us back to your, give us a little history of your birth and your growing up years?
Well, I don't remember my birth, but I'm pretty sure I was there. I'm an only child, and I was born in New Jersey, in Newark, and I grew up in an apartment in Elizabeth, which is a fairly rough town.
Yeah, it is. I used to go in there.
Yeah. And we've already discussed a little bit of my parents' history. And so I, according to my mom, I didn't start talking till I was four. Mm-hmm. And my belief is that I wasn't sure that I wanted to commit. So
I was play it kinda, safe, play it safe.
Play it safe, kind of like the ostrich, you know. I there must have been some of my thinking, which was, if I start talking, I am definitely here. And I'm not quite sure.
Validation.
It's a validation. So I'm not quite sure I really wanted to be here. But apparently, once I said something, it was a full sentence, which surprised everyone. And then I didn't talk again for another month. And since then, I've made up for the 4 years easily.
Well, you're doing fine right now.
Thank you. Thank you. I think growing up, it was a real mixed bag. And we grew up on an economic level, probably on a lower middle class. And yet, so the students that I went to school with were either lower income or higher income. I felt like we...
That's good mathematics.
Yeah, I was in an island. And yet, because of my dad's job, he was getting tickets to go review opening nights in New York City in ballet and music and seeing the very best people in the world. And I was very fortunate that he took me to go quite a bit, which was a huge inspiration for me.
About how old were you then?
Oh, probably anywheres from somewhere in my single digits on up. Mm-hmm. So I had a great appreciation for that. And yet, because my parents were children of immigrants, and like most immigrants, they had very little when they came here, so their major concern was survival, mm-hmm. that kind of fear was transmitted to my parents, economic survival and so on, practicality.
Your parents were immigrants, or they were born here?
My grandparents were immigrants, and my parents were young during the Depression, mm-hmm. so they had that as a compounding element to the desire for practicality and survival, and that fear was passed on to me. So at the same time that I was being really inspired by the arts, which most of you may guess is not a sure sign of financial security, mm-hmm. they were encouraging me that way and then to a degree as a as an avocation, perhaps, and then but get a degree that will provide you with money, mm-hmm. and that led to a push and pull throughout a large part of my life, and I think that probably, like a lot of other folks listening, their parents may not have been geared to deal with the eccentricities and uniqueness of their children's skill sets.
Mm-hmm. Overlooked or unknown, unrecognized.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I there was nothing by any means malicious in
sure.
their parenting.
Right.
And yet, it was a very powerful, frustrating element for my career.
So in effect, fear was really the propulsion mm-hmm. to work and to exceed. I mean, fear can be a very powerful, positive tool.
It can. And there's an acronym that I use in my classes for fear, which I believe everything has an energetic one way or another. And I think to pursue life, part of that is to be aware of whatever energies are around you or what energies you're creating by your thinking and by your speaking. And so this acronym really helps switch the dynamic that most people associate with fear. And the acronym is feeling excited and ready. Mm-hmm. Rather than, oh my gosh, there's...
Be confrontational.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned that one of the major stepping stones to your evolvement were to overcome addictions.
Yes.
Can you tell us about those addictions?
To a certain degree.
Okay.
they're not the addictions that I used to associate with that word. It was not drugs, was not alcohol. They were more common, mundane issues. Food, the opposite sex, spider solitaire. And the biggest addiction, which unfortunately, I believe I share with most of the human race, or have shared, no longer do so, is that of suffering. And so addictions are often activities and belief systems that we perhaps aren't even aware of.
Our addictions.
Our addictions.
We all have addictions, and by your definition
and your
clarity, we all have addictions.
We do, because what happens, and it's a neuroscientists have confirmed this kind of thing, we form, based on whatever we believe and think, we form certain kinds of passageways in our brain. And if we think along the same ways day in and day out, then those passages become nutritionally supported where others don't. And I mean, I get why the yogis stare at your navel. Well, really what they're talking about is refocusing, literally, physically refocusing, which sends blood and nutrition to other areas of their brain mm-hmm. than their normal activities do, which then gives them a much more expansive viewpoint mm-hmm. and perception of whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. I wonder if you can, those are major accomplishments. I'm number one to recognize the addictions that we all have. Mm-hmm. Then number one, account for it. And number two, to make a positive, decisive decision that I'm going to overcome this. And I think that, Bennett, we have another break right now. So
okay.
When we come back, I'd like for you to share with our listeners something that every one of our listeners have in their golf cart, including myself, and I don't play golf.
Either
so
do I.
We're going to take a quick break. So if you could hang on here for another minute. This is from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain, California. This is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, and I'm the host, of course, Henry Cuenca. We are locally produced and listener-supported at KKRN in Bella Vista, California. And we'll be right back. Back, and you're listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, and my guest today is Bennett Gale, and we're really enjoying your view and motivations on who you are and what you do.
Thank you.
Before our break, we were talking about addictions, and based on, you know, your definition, we all cart these things around. How did you best deal with these addictions that you had?
Great question. The not so simple answer, but short one, is I made a distinction between the activities of my personality, which some people call ego, and the recognition of who and what I am, which is spirit having a human experience. So as a personality, as an ego, I've got as much stuff going on as anyone else does.
Sure.
And in spirit, I see myself as an infinite being. So I looked at, okay, well, geez, I said this or I did this thing that I'm not particularly happy about or proud about. That's not essentially who I am. So I think the one addiction that we all share is a serious attachment to being human.
I think that means me and Shane.
I would imagine that includes most of us. And when I say that and I teach that, it is funny. It is humorous because our natural response is, well, what else are we? That lends itself to a wonderful discussion.
Absolutely.
Because we're way more than the human persona that we're evidencing and we're experiencing here. I'm not denigrating it, I'm not belittling it. It's extraordinary to be human and to function as a human and go through all the things that we go through. It's not the whole ball game.
Beautifully said. You had said that your father was aloof.
Mm-hmm.
You also said that it appeared that you had somewhat of a close tie. He was always taking you to opening performances in
Yes.
New York,
mm-hmm.
etc. Obviously, a very cultured family.
Mm-hmm.
So, bind those two things for us: the aloofness that played a major part in your early formation. And the other hand, seemingly being closer to your father by going off and doing things together. There seems to be a little gap there.
Well, not for me, because
I think that's more important.
Yeah. It was held together by the exquisiteness of the arts that we both perceived. Uh-huh. So we would go and we would see mostly dance and ballet. And again, the best performers in the world would perform in Manhattan. And so you're in a beautiful theater and all of these people really well dressed and this stunning music and the artistry of the dancers. That's what we shared. But that was not communicated between he and I. That was the two of us going to a place, sitting next to each other, and watching this. And because my dad was a critic, he had to start formulating his story, his reporting, while he was there. Because when we would get home, he would drop me off and he would go right to, back in those days, we didn't have the computers, he would go right to his office to do the report for the next day's publication. So he was preoccupied with the mechanics or whatever he was writing, but we did share the experience. But that's not a communication.
Part communication, right?
Yeah, it's not a one-on-one sharing of thoughts and so forth.
I once remember hearing a statistic decades ago that the average father spent 17 seconds of direct, meaningful communication with their children. And I thought about that. I said, geez, 17 seconds? And the article went on to say, yep, the father comes home from work and he says, hi there, how you doing today? Goes off, changes clothes, how was school? Good. When's dinner, right? And I started thinking, I said, you know, that's right. I'm spending 17 seconds a day with my kids. But in reality, you can actually see how that formulates.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's part of an old parenting paradigm. I don't know if it's the same now for...
Things have changed, no question.
I think they have, probably.
Right.
But what a tragedy.
My goodness sakes. My goodness sakes.
For both? Not only the children, but for the parents.
Well, society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at us now.
Yeah.
You know, we have students that have two or three fathers during the course of a semester in school.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your mother was unique.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that fine family triology dynamic, she was a gifted pianist, taking lessons from a world-renowned.
Right.
Tell us about your mother.
Well, quite honestly, she was fairly secretive, and she was not very, very forthcoming about her piano career. I learned about it I came across old piano clippings. She was giving full-length recitals on the radio when she was 9.
Really?
Yeah. And we didn't even have a piano till I was 12 or 13. I heard her play the Star Spangled Banner once at a PTA meeting. And near the end of her life, she died. She died when I was, I think, believe 19, but it was a 3-year horrible deterioration from cancer. So I remember being in the house and the piano was just outside of her bedroom. And at that point, she could barely move. But I went over, she wanted to get up. I helped her out from the bedroom over to the piano. There were some of her old music books there, which were these classical pieces. She motioned for me to pick up the book and put it on the piano. She couldn't even pick it up.
Mm.
And given the limitations of her strength, played through 10 or 12 pieces perfectly.
My goodness.
And didn't even say anything and just kind of got up and went back to bed.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's a story that's an experience that stayed with me throughout my life.
Were you close to your mother?
As close as the generational programming would allow.
I know that you had stated that one of the worst periods of your life was when your mother died.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only imagine that there was some emotional bonding between you two.
There was, and interestingly enough, most of it came after she passed. A few years after she passed, I had a series of dreams where she was alive and we were communicating in a much more meaningful, mm-hmm. interactive way about her illness, about her impending demise. And to the extent when I would wake up, it would take me 5 or 10 minutes to to get my wits about me. Has my mother passed away already, or is she going to pass away? And so the series of dreams, that was the emotional conclusion. And then I felt her around me for several decades afterwards.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I know that you had a profound epiphany, spiritual experience, that we certainly want to talk about.
Sure.
As this was a transitional event.
Right.
But before we get to that, I wanted to know, what was there a sense, any sense of spirituality in the years growing up? Any sense of spirituality?
For me personally,
that fell onto you. I mean, there was obviously a family dynamic. Both parents were very well skilled in what they do. The family unity was a little bit fractured, it seems like. So what was there any sense of any spirituality?
There was a sense of organized religion. And
so you went to church?
Well, I went to a Jewish church. Mm-hmm. So I was brought up as a Reformed Jew. And so we did go to a temple on Fridays. I did get bar mitzvahed. And even that was an omen, because that traditionally is a symbol of moving into manhood. But the closest Saturday the temple could get for my birthday was Halloween. So I was bar mitzvah on Halloween, and immediately there was a conflict because I wanted to go trick-or-treating, and my parents said no, because now you're a man. So other than a few coercive acts, I really didn't go back to temple. I was not a believer in organized religion. And my sense of spirituality, I believe, was with me from day one.
From day one?
Pretty much.
What are your earliest recollections of that?
Well, besides the epiphany, which you want me to speak of, which I'd be delighted to, I always was concerned with awareness. I didn't use that term then. I used to use levels. Mm-hmm. Different levels of what's possible, what are our potentials. And
so you were critical thinking at a very young age.
I was criticized from a very early age. But yeah. I've been kind of a philosophical type kid. Uh-huh. I was. And it just seemed to be what was most interesting. And sometimes as a child, you look at it, well, what's the fastest? What's the biggest? Who's the best? But as you start moving along that road, you go through all forms of psychology and analytical thinking, different forms of spirituality, a whole potpourri of belief systems.
Bennett, tell us about your educational background.
Well, I went to public schools, mm-hmm. and at some point, and this was one of the demons that I've had to exorcise, at some point, feeling alienated from just about everybody, mm-hmm. I had developed this ego veneer.
Interesting term.
Well, in light of what I said earlier, I think veneer, actually, I've never used that before, but mm-hmm. I believe that that's... Mm-hmm. pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know what? All of this stuff is going on in schools. It's not for me. And I remarkably turned off my mind to a significant degree. Mm-hmm. And it's taken me quite a while to bring it back. And it's quite a joy.
Mm-hmm. And you have educational... You went to school at Juilliard?
I went to upstate New York. I went to Ithaca College, which is a profoundly good school for music and theater and drama and communications.
Okay. Bennett, we're going to have to take another quick break, mm-hmm. and I want to tell our listeners that when we come back from our break, we are going to get into the profound epiphany that our guest today had at age four. We have plenty of Kleenex here in case anybody wants it. So in any event, this is Henry Cuenca at the Henry Cuenca Radio Talk Show on KKRN 88.5, listener-supported radio. And my guest today is Bennett Yale, and we're going to be right back after this tune. Thank you. Welcome back to the Henry Cuenca Talk Show with our very interesting, distinguished guest, Bennett Yale. Yale, we can see that you had a really interesting life. Mm-hmm. There were some missing parts, and I think all of us have missing parts.
Amen. There.
But you had quite a life-changing event about age 4 or 5.
Right.
And I'd like for you to kind of give us, maybe if you can remember, some of the precepts of this event and the effect of having this,
sure,
this vision. So tell us about this.
Sure. Well, I had a vision, and in the vision I was in a room, and there was Jesus, and I knew him. It's not like, oh, you must be Jesus because you look like a picture somewhere. I knew him like we were friends. And I ran up to him, and he picked me up, and we went flying all over the world. And we would come, we never landed. We'd come close to the surface, very close to the surface. And on each occasion that we came close to the surface, there were different groups of people praying, all kinds. And what I remember is a short, bittersweet laugh. And he said, "They don't understand me." Mm-hmm. And that, fast forward all these decades, that was the seed. That was the seed, I believe, for how I, the main thread that has been continuous throughout my life, which has been to understand what that meant. And even now, as I sit here speaking with you, it means something a little bit more expansive and broader for me than it did certainly back then. Because I got a sense, even in that short, that initial short experience together, I got a much more expansive sense of the being. And that kind of put me in my own unique direction for awareness, because I felt like, well, I know him, and I'm. It may be interesting to read about him, but I can just talk to him. I know him. Almost like you can call up a friend and say, "Hey, you want to go out and eat?" I know him.
Wow.
And that led to my explorations. That led to, many years later, in my journaling and in my inner listening, getting guidance, not only from him, but from some other extraordinary beings. And for a long time, I didn't even know that's what was going on, because it just seemed so natural to me.
At the time, did you tell your parents about this experience?
I mentioned it, and it was glossed over because mm-hmm. it was not part of their vocabulary for dealing with things. And I remember many, many years later, I was telling a very esteemed friend of mine about this experience, and I said, "And Jesus was not a household word because we were raised Jewish." And then he said, "Well, Jesus was Jewish, so there you go." and so there's been a lot of humor, as well as a lot of profound points. And what that means to me now is, I see his coming and his being here as more as a representation of what's possible and a kind of world that I aspire for myself. We aspire, my wife and I, and that my goal for service is meant to help foster. And that's a whole different level of awareness. It's a different level of celebration of being. It is not about being perpetually condemned to being less than. Mm-hmm. That's part of the programming I'm talking about. Wow. And I'm passionate about that.
Well, I can tell, certainly, and obviously it has been the trigger mm-hmm. for your whole life, and in particular, the activity that you're currently involved in.
Right.
In everything that you do.
I mean, absolutely.
It's. I knew when I saw you to play with Charles Dickens, I said, this guy's got an edge on something.
He's got an edge.
Tell us about your works.
Well, there's been these twin dynamics of teaching and sharing about spirit, about different perceptions, about awareness, and theater. And I got that there's really no separation, which, of course, is a primary spiritual concept. There is no separation except what we create.
Yeah.
So I came up with a concept called sacred inner theater. And that basically, it's evolving. It started out with, I'm going to use theatrical techniques to teach awareness for people who are not necessarily interested in being actors, but it's evolved to include everything that comes through this mind of mine to teach about awareness and so forth. And because in my perception, all of what we're doing is theater, and each one of us is already acting, and each one of us acts several different roles based upon who we're with and what the situations are. And it's rare indeed to find the being that is truly aligned with their inner guidance and source. And that's my new definition of genius.
Oh, it's a pretty good definition. In other words, if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
Unless you consciously really want to be in a hole, then go for it.
A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Right? We all do sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're all diggers, right? We all have our little shovels, or big shovels.
Yeah, you know, us folks who go out there and in one form or another preach a gospel, whether it's the gospel in the Bible or other holy books, or the gospel according to whatever comes through your brain, we do so because we took on a whole lot of these addictions, a whole lot of these trip holes in order to be able to understand them fully and be able to communicate, okay, well, I know this hole, mm-hmm. I know this problem. Mm-hmm. I truly do, and this is one technique or a few techniques that I've discovered to get out of it, mm-hmm. and it's worth getting out of. Trust me.
I trust you. I believe you.
I said that to whoever might be listening.
Oh, we got a lot of listeners out there, all over from Rome. We're in Rome. I know every time we're on the show, and
wow,
we're all over. So. You had told me that one of the things that was one of your best ideas was learn what not to love.
what not to love, what is not to love.
Okay.
Are you referring to the funny anecdote that I shared with
whatever,
you?
Whatever, whatever.
Well, yeah, there was this great experience. I was by myself, and I was full of spirit, just full of joy. I'm not sure what precipitated that, but I was. And I said to myself, oh, Jesus, I love you so much. And immediately, this voice came back into my head and said, what's not to love? In an old man's Jewish accent.
Oh, and, my goodness sakes.
Spirit is joy. Spirit is humor.
I totally concur.
And I'm just encouraging folks to really reach for their own creativity, their own uniqueness. That's, again, that's another paradox, is to celebrate the uniqueness and diversity as one organism, mm-hmm. within one organism. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, or whatever, as a race, we tend to make that a separative kind of thing rather than an embracing kind of.
Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful way with words.
Thank you.
Yeah, really, very, very. And you write books.
I am writing books.
Tell us a little bit about that. We have a few more minutes.
Okay. There are three books underway, and one of them is a fictional book, and it is about an everyday kind of guy who comes on to many unusual experiences and awarenesses, hopefully often with humor, and he moves into quantum realities, which is where I personally am heading and what I'm teaching. And then there are two other books. One is a book of contemplative phrases to contemplate and perhaps write on, the individual to write on. And another one is, I'm calling The Mechanics of Human Potential, which sums it all up, hopefully.
There's a lot of information there in those few words. My goodness.
My goodness, there is a lot of information. Yeah.
Even though your show, our discussion this morning has brought out innumerous really positive things for all of us, mm-hmm. our listeners and here, you've given us a lot of insight on thinking about our own situations and connecting those things to the things that you do. If you were to lay out more clearly to our listeners, what advice would you give to people?
Well, I have a simple question. I have a simple, not simple response. I always ask myself in situations that deem it necessary, what would love do now? And that brings it all to...
Boy, pretty much says the whole thing.
Pretty much. What would love do now? Am I operating in love's name, or am I operating in a way contrary?
Right. Well, Bennett, beautiful. I guess we've delivered in all of our premises today, and we're going to be signing off here. Did you want to say one more thing?
Yeah, I want to let people know that this very evening on the 20th, I'll be speaking at the Reading Library at 6 o'clock from Sacred Theater's perspective of overcoming the fear of public speaking from the inside out.
Very good. Very interesting. I'm going to try to make that myself.
I hope you do.
Yeah. Right. Okay, you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. Or you can call us at 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio to learn more about us. I thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and the world a better place. Please tune in to my next show, Tuesday, April 3rd at 8 a.m., where you will meet traces of a real, living, non-fictional Wonder Woman. She is credited with being a registered nurse, a PhD, a CEO of two hospitals, and finally, CEO of her own company, bringing 350 CEOs, some from public companies, to mastermind groups. Her core beliefs are simple: have fun and put 10 times more into whatever you take out. So, there is only one thing worse than being blind, is having sight by no vision, by Helen Keller. That is today's quotation of the day. Thank you for listening.